This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome to Health and Living with me, T. Xiaoyik. It's our Doctor in the House show today. That means Dr. George Lee, consultant neurologist, is in the house. How are you, George?
Very good. Looking forward to another exciting program with you. Still looking forward to meet you face to face.
We will see when that happens. We don't know where COVID-19 is going, do we, George?
Yeah, we'll probably just get to see each other by 2040 or something.
You'll be decrepit by then.
Absolutely, I'm still alive.
So today we are talking about something that's sort of indirectly related to COVID-19, but you know, more generally as well, how it affects our everyday health. We're talking about health literacy. So whether it's to tackle the rising incidence of non-communicable diseases like obesity, diabetes, heart disease, or to curb the spread of COVID-19 as we're doing now, it's important that we equip ourselves with the knowledge to make decisions about our health and that of our family members as well. But actually, how many of us have that kind of information and the skills to do that? So joining us on the show today, George, is Komati Perialadan, Health Education Officer from the Institute for Health Behavioral Research at the Malaysian National Institutes for Health. Welcome, Komati. How are you today?
Hi, I'm fine, Michelle. Hi, Dr. George.
Hi, Komati. We've been looking forward to this all week, right?
Yeah, definitely. Sure.
So we throw about this phrase health literacy quite happily, but what actually does it mean, Komati?
Okay, to explain in a simple way, health literacy is an ability of an individual to access and understand health information, appraise the information, or you say evaluate information, and apply it effectively in decision-making towards their health. In the sense that you make sense of the information that you receive regarding their health and use it wisely in your daily health decision-making.
Can you give us an example of how that would work? For example, maybe a patient who's just been diagnosed with diabetes or something like that.
Okay. Just say if a patient get diagnosed with diabetes, definitely the first thing is like even our own self, we would want to know, okay, what is this diabetes all about? Whether it's curable? You know, people have so many questions in their mind because getting diagnosed with a chronic disease is not an easy thing to be accepted. So we would like if a person with good health literacy navigate and access to this information regarding this disease, and may even like have confidence to ask their healthcare provider regarding how they can actually manage and control this disease. And then they may, with information they have, they may evaluate whether they should comply to the medications or go seeking for a traditional treatment outside. And at this point of time, if they have a good health literacy, they would know that complying to the medications given is the best choice that they're supposed to follow to. And then apply it. And most important, health literacy actually is all about empowering individual to self-manage themselves. So they will be able to self-check and then self-care, and then, you know, they will be able to control their disease in an effective way as they can self-manage and not relying 100% to the healthcare providers to take care of their health. So that we'll see.
Wow, Komati, that is a mouthful of a definition there, right? Okay. Obviously, health literacy itself, if I simplify it, mm-hmm. in the form of understanding and mm-hmm. self-apply the actual information itself, process the information and actually apply it yourself. Mm-hmm. However, can I find out, you know, just to take a step back, you are a health education officer at the Institute of Health and Behavioral Research. Is this part of your kind of like a work mainly just to look at behavior? Because a lot of this relies on behavior, right?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, actually, for our Institute for Health Behavior Research does focus on assessing overall population's behavior towards health per se, focusing on health per se. So it's not only about health literacy, but any other behaviors that related to health, like risky behaviors.
Great that you can elaborate that a little bit. I mean, forgive me for my ignorance, but you know, the National Institute of Health is that part of the KKM, and then also And what sort of roles do you play in the term of public health? I mean, just for the benefit of the listeners.
National Institute for Health is the research component of Ministry of Health Malaysia. Actually, National Institute for Health comprises 6 research institutes under our KKM. We have Institute for Medical Research, Institute for Public Health, Institute for Health System Research, Institute for Health Management, and we have our Institute for Clinical Research and Institute for Health Behavioral Research. Each institute have their own focus area in conducting the research. Like our behavioral research focuses on the health behavioral aspects. Institute for Health System Research does health system research. They do the health system research and how improving the health system of Malaysia. And then we have like Institute for Health Management that looks into the management issues in hospital settings and everything. And then we have like medical research, Institute for Medical Research. As I say, IMA is actually quite one of the pioneer research institute in Malaysia. So it focuses on the medical researches, and Institute for Clinical Research focuses on the clinical trials. And then Institute for Public Health does epidemiology studies for health, in assessing the prevalence of certain chronic diseases. Like last year, this health literacy was done, collaborated with the Institute for Public Health, whereby National Institute for Public Health conduct the National Health Mobility Survey. So this is health literacy was a part of that main study.
Can we talk a little bit about the findings of that survey, Komati? Because what came out was that 1 in 3 people have low health literacy. But what does that actually mean about us?
Okay, before I explain further on the low literacy, I would like to explain what actually the assessment scope was for the health literacy last year, last year's assessment. Okay, for the last year's health literacy assessment, we actually assess the ability of an individual to actually, as you say, the 4 components on access, understand, appraise, and apply informations, health information pertaining to the 3 main domains, that is healthcare, disease prevention, and health promotion. So when we talk about the 1 in 3 Malaysians have low health literacy, it means this group of people may have difficulties in these 4 skills of accessing and understanding and applying and evaluating the information pertaining to their disease prevention activities, pertaining to their healthcare, as well as in participating in the health promotion activities. So when you talk about having decreased ability in the healthcare, these persons may have issues in managing their medical related issues, and maybe they have a poorer understanding of how to comply to the medical advisors. And we talk about decreased ability in the disease prevention. They may have issues in understanding what are the risk factors for their health and how actually they can prevent from getting chronic diseases. And we call about decreased ability in the health promotion domain. We can say like these people may have issues in understanding what are the determinants of good health, healthy living, and how they can identify how health promoting initiatives can actually encourage them for a better healthy lifestyle. So actually, it assesses these 4 components of assessing, understanding, accessing, understanding, and appraising, and use the information in a rightful health decision making in these 3 domains. That was the assessment. So when we say,
So when you highlighted 1 in 3 of the population don't have health literacy, did you break it down to which component of that literacy was deficient?
Actually, when we do the assessment, it was it was for the 3 assessment as well. It was an overall assessment for the 3 domains. We didn't like really go particularly to each, but I have the percentage of how many actually having limited health literacy in each scope of domain if you want to know further.
Well, it'd be interesting just to quickly know whether we are doing better in any of the particular domains, or are we equally bad in all 3?
Actually, when we compare to the 3 domains, we were actually having more percentage of population have lower health literacy in the healthcare domain.
In managing their specific medical issues. All right. Yeah. And So then, George, I want to find out from you, what do you observe? And you are seeing patients with medical conditions. What do you assess of their literacy levels and their behaviours?
Well, first of all, for access, I think in Malaysia, all of us have all sorts of access. You know, in Malaysia, we're well known for accessing medical literacy in air quotes.
Whether it's the right one or not.
That's right. Yeah. From your WhatsApp and from your neighbors or your neighbors' neighbors. And then so access itself is one component, which I think that might be just too much of the access. And what is accurate or not, so that comes to the assessment itself. And I think that self-assessment itself may be cultural as well. Because I have patients who are doctors or PhD holders who actually have should have the knowledge to process that information and should have the knowledge to digest the scientific basis of this. However, because of culturally, they believe that something natural is better, you know, do not have any trust in air quote of Western medicine. And they don't consume the medicine itself for their own benefit. So their compliance is not so good. So in many ways, although we might apply these healthcare literacy in a more generalized manner, but I think culturally, we have something that is very different from Western culture when it comes to access and also processing the information that we get. Kumasi, what's your view on that?
Actually, I agree with that. That's where when we see that, as you are saying, Dr. George, regarding not focusing on access as solely, but other things like the cultural aspects and about them having issues with complying with the medication, that's where this health literacy comes into the picture, whereby health literacy is just not about having knowledge, but it's one step above, whereby actually, with information, you're supposed to be able to judge well whether you're supposed to comply with the medications or not. Whether if you don't follow or if you don't comply, what will happen to you? You know, at that level, you're supposed to be able to evaluate. So that's why there's supposed to be a bit more critical thinking to that. Look, however, your surrounding environment and your own self-motivation can actually influence you. Even though you can be a very highly literate person, maybe when you do the assessment, you can have a very high score of health literacy, but your individual attitude and self-motivation in taking charge of your health is very important to for you to be able to actually react in a positive way towards your health. That's what I would say.
So if I give you an example, I'm a doctor. I've been practicing for more than 25 years. Mm-hmm. And then I have this persistent cough. I know my persistent cough perhaps is due to, let's say, my lifestyle. Let's say my smoking or anything. Mm-hmm. But my mother, who have traditional belief that eating bird's nest is going to help me, and I take the bird's nest. So do I have good health literacy or do I have poor health literacy according to your definitions? Instead of taking like...
Okay, that's quite a tricky question. Okay, actually, I won't be able to... Because when we say that you're a doctor, so you're a learned person. Moreover than any other normal common people, you're actually more learned person. But when it comes to the thing that you have a persistent cough, rather than you seeking maybe another expert in this clinical care of like how maybe a specialist in the ENT or what, but you rather than that, you actually believe the traditional medication should be able to cure this disease.
Because so I'm being a good boy listening to my mommy.
At that point of time, you're supposed like, if you're really a super good health literate person, you're supposed to judge wisely and maybe seek a professional opinion regarding this. But rather than that, you actually opt out for traditional treatment. I wouldn't say that it's wrong to practice traditional treatment, but then it's always good for us to go and seek, don't delay the treatment seeking. So in that sense, your health literacy doesn't work so well in that aspect.
So I'm a poor health literacy person, but it's very common that sort of scenario happening in the Malaysian society.
Yeah. Exactly. And I think that the example you gave, George, exactly paints how much of a gray area healthcare and health-seeking behaviors fall into, because you could very well also have tried some conventional medications or treatments. You are also trying bird's nest on top of it. Or there are situations where the individual may shun conventional treatment, you know, directly. So all these are such individual behaviors. And how does your own personal health literacy play into or influence the decisions that you make? And I guess that's the individual process that everyone comes to, right? We'll just have to go for a quick break. But when we come back, I want to ask, how then do we develop or learn this health literacy if it's not just about having access to a plethora of information around us? So we'll find out when we come back. I'm speaking to Komati Perialadan, Health Education Officer from the Institute for Health Behavioral Research at the National Institutes for Health. And of course, joining me for this Doctor in House segment is consultant neurologist Dr. George Lee. We'll be right back on BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Health and Living. I'm T. Xiao Ik. On the line with me, my co-host, consultant neurologist Dr. George Lee, for our Doctor in the House segment. And today we are discussing health literacy. So to help us out with that topic, we have Komati Perialadan, Health Education Officer from the Institute for Health Behavioral Research at the National Institutes for Health. So, you know, we have six institutes under this NIH in Malaysia. And so we should be very well equipped as Malaysians when it comes to health information and skills in terms of managing medical conditions and preventing diseases. But
stop people like me taking bird's nest and call myself too heaty when I cough too much.
But you're very filial, George. So take heart in that. So was that story about you?
Yes.
You know, before the break, George, there was an example that you cited, a hypothetical example, shall we say, of somebody who has education, who is equipped with information, but what do you use to make health decisions in your personal life? And that's where health literacy comes in. And Komati, you already talked about things like being able to access, understand, appraise, and apply this information. And that's sort of like the journey you need to go through. So if one in three Malaysians have low health literacy, what does it take to develop good health literacy?
As I said, health literacy is not about just like getting the health knowledge and act on it, but about their own individual self-motivation. You know, like when you give importance to their health, then definitely you'll be able to try and find ways how to actually have a quality living and how to practice a good healthy lifestyle to actually have a better health for yourself and even your loved ones and loved ones. So when we say about how to actually get good health literacy, I would say that, of course, at ministry level or as a healthcare institutions and as like the Ministry of Health had tried to like make health information more accessible. But then when it comes to own health seeking, we have to actually motivate our populations to actually see that health is actually a very important and valuable thing, because health is wealth as well. So we have to make sure that people value health. As how we can see, give an example, just say for the COVID-19, the prevention measures like wearing a mask, practicing physical distancing, all this is actually a new common norm that we have not practiced before. But now we are actually normalizing this behavior. It becomes the new norm for us. We are adapting this into our lifestyle. Same goes to this giving importance to the health. It should be normalized in ourselves. So this actually takes just not by simply giving health information, but your surrounding environment should actually promote healthy living in overall. Everybody, individual level, at the policy level, and overall, in a national level, health should be given a priority as one of the important aspects of a population. Your surrounding environment is supposed to like promote and support you in practicing healthy lifestyle. So it's not just about giving environment, but like you get become make health is more accessible. So people have no issues when they come to, like, they don't have like barriers to access to quality or health health informations, or to go and seek knowledge, extra knowledge regarding how they can take care of their health or something like that. That's how we should actually promote.
You pointed out a utopia that we highlighted the importance of all these. But we had four series of national health and morbidity survey showing that situations like diabetes, dyslipidemia, obesity is getting worse. So does that mean that we continue to have poor health literacy, or somehow our information is just not instilling to the general population about importance of this?
Actually, what I would say that there's no lacking to information. Nowadays, with all these media platforms, information is so accessible. But it actually goes back to the behavior. Because when you see that diabetes is increasing, all these chronic diseases are increasing, actually, it goes back to our lifestyle, how actually we are living our way of lifestyle.
Whose job do you think is it to control and to police people's behaviors? If all the information is already available to tell you what to do, does it continue to be the healthcare authorities' jobs? Does it continue to be the doctor's jobs? Somebody like George, who perhaps has spoken to his patients about, losing weight, for instance, or monitoring cancer, does he have to keep policing their behavior?
Actually, to seriously speaking, it should be our own self. It should be the responsible of that person itself. It's not about if you see, like, we are depending solely on the government to take care of ourselves, health ministry to take care of ourselves. I think they can take care in the sense like they provide the best service they can and then provide us with the medication and everything. But when it comes to, like, if you don't comply or you have issues complying with the medications and or your treatment treatment process, you will actually will be suffering for the outcomes. So actually, the main picture here is everybody should be empowered to take care of their own health. That is actually, I think, very important.
Well, I disagree with this whole idea that people will have the responsibility to somehow shoulder that responsibility to take care of themselves. I think one of the problems we have is our attitude towards illness. Because whenever we are diagnosed having diabetes, we will say, oh, it's a touch of diabetes, it doesn't matter that
a
much.
Touch.
A touch of diabetes, a touch of blood pressure.
Sikit. Sikit.
And then we always have these excuses, it's a bit of angin, it's because of stress and that sort of thing. And I think partly is our attitude towards diseases. It's not, we don't take it seriously until it's too late. It's until diabetes actually ended up with dialysis. It's when the stroke kicks in. And that's when it's too late. And that's part of our problem, which I see. So instilling this information to say it's important, it's dangerous, a scare tactic, somehow just doesn't work. And therefore, I think part of this is the doctor's responsibility as well. I remember, I've lost a lot of weight, and then I think BFN has seen me through kind of like weight off. But 4 years ago, when I was 108 kilo, and when I was telling my patient that you need to lose weight, and that simply doesn't work, because if the doctors themselves don't lead by an example. So to police this, like what Xiaowei suggested, is simply not happening. It says that you can't have a doctor who's smoking to tell the patient to stop smoking. And I think that's part of the problem, is the healthcare provider's attitude and also the general public attitude towards diseases. How are we going to solve that problem?
I thought you would have the answer, George. The other thing is that we have a lot of information. We have a lot of health campaigns with very specific themes targeted at different diseases. But how do we bridge that gap between putting the information out there and seeing how it can help individual consumers and individual people change their behaviors. Komati, from your institute's perspective, what work do you do to look at what is at the heart of people's behaviors?
Actually, I would say behavior is very subjective. And for us to assess an individual behavior, it's not an easy thing. People can be very motivating at one point of time. Like, just say today, I've decided, like I heard Dr. George say he managed to lose weight. Same goes to me. I would say, okay, I would want to do that. But then the next day, maybe my behavior would change. That it's so troublesome to do that. So actually, we do assess behavior, but as from the studies that we have done, behavior should be regulated. It means when regulation is in place, then the behavior follow through. Okay, for an example, I would take this COVID-19 pandemic. Actually, when we talk about practicing physical distancing, talk about wearing masks and all those things, actually, people were very aware they would like to practice it. But some take it lightly. But when there's regulations in place of in this aspect, whereby physical distancing must be practiced, whereby the if you go to certain places, they ensure that you only can go to shop only limited numbers of people. Okay, wearing masks is actually a law in the public. So when it happens, people follow. So actually, just depending on an individual to act based on their conscience, it can happen, but regulations must follow through for people to abide to this.
See, practices. Komati believes in rotan.
Yes, so, I was just going to say, it's the stick. It's the stick
rotan comes
that
up,
works.
The Malaysian will stick to it, right? Okay.
I think as a society, as a culture, we like to be told what to do. We feel more comfortable when we receive instructions, clear guidelines.
I don't like to be told what to do.
Well, if it's your mother telling you to eat bird's nest, apparently you do.
That's true.
I'll do that then. Oh, it tastes quite all right. The other thing which Komati explained earlier on, which I think we probably don't dwell too much on, is the environment. So partly the enforcement of regulation, I agree that on circumstances such as enforcement of mask and enforcement of no smoking policies in restaurants and situation like that, it's worked beautifully. And I think enforcement on obesity, high blood pressure, like, you know, you don't lose weight, you don't come back to work. I think that will be
That's very, very tricky.
Yeah, it will be very difficult to implement. And I think what you mentioned about the environment is really quite important. If the environment is conducive for healthy lifestyle and everyone is doing it, I think the Malaysian lifestyle, we will follow that sort of like environment. Let's say there are more parks, there are more people jogging, there are more people running, more healthier lifestyle. And then in general, if that is perceived as a cool thing to do, and I really think we will have a healthier nation.
You know, George, you talked about culture earlier, influencing your individual decisions. But if we talk about, if we look at Japan as a culture that really inculcates healthy living, I would say, from a very young age, and we can see the outcomes in their population where even at older ages, their elderly population does better in terms of health outcomes compared to other societies. What do you think works in Japan that we could, I don't know, look towards?
Look east. Well, we did look for, look towards Japan for Proton. So yeah. Look where it says. Right. Yeah. Okay, right. Well, Proton is on a kind of like, another revival. I agree with you. I think the whole structure that culturally, if let's say more and more people take responsibility not to advise next door neighbors that, you know, urut is good for you or the papaya leaves can save your lives from dengue. And I think more people take that responsibility not to give irresponsible advice. And I think that will be for start, which is really good. The second thing is that if generally people give doctors and healthcare providers a chance rather than just thinking of natural is good and Western medicine, it's a bad thing. You know, I think that is a second cultural thing that needs to change, because there seems to be, in my practice, there seems to be that distrust of Western medicine, because people tend to think that when you take it, you'll take it for life, you're dependent on it for life. And then when you take it, and also it will be damaging for your kidneys, and then so instead you'll be taking like 10 tablets of vitamins a day. And I think those cultural mindset needs to change, and this needs to change from young age. So I think the Japan culture is different. It's because they are responsible. They trust the healthcare system that it's going to look after them. They are proved to show that the healthcare system takes them to longevity of life. And I really think that looking at the Japanese culture and learn a lot from them to achieve that longevity of life as the final outcome, many people will subscribe to that.
What do you think, Komati?
Okay, I agree with what Dr. Josh said just now. Like, a lot of people have to take charge in being responsible not to give inaccurate informations. Same goes to people who receive the information. So they're supposed to evaluate and judge wisely whether they should act on it or seek a professional expert. So that's where the health literacy plays an important part. And when you talk about culture, it's not very easy for us to forego culture. Because, like, not to say traditional medicines doesn't work at all, but then you have to know when it is used. It should be used properly and not appropriately. And when we see that in Japan, the culture of healthy living is practiced obediently by the people. Over here in Malaysia, also, maybe in school, just say I give an example. In school, you ask the children to lead a active lifestyle, like exposing them to knowledge on how to live healthily, do physical activity, eat healthily. But when they go back to the house and then they are exposed to like some parents who are not so aware of the importance of healthy living, and they are fed with not so healthy foods. So you have like a kind of imbalance here. So when we talk about healthy living, it should be from all levels. Even when we talk about healthy living, it should come from our regulations as well, from the policy levels as well. Just say if you talk about having restaurants opening at 24 hours, it actually in a way promoting people to eat at late nights. But when you have like certain guidelines and certain rules, not to have eateries more than 24 hours or something like that, maybe it can help people to, okay, I think I shouldn't be eating at late hours. You know, that kind of thing. Actually, policy plays a very important role also for people to actually practice good healthy lifestyle, where some stringent measures has to be taken for us to actually support a conducive environment to people practice healthy lifestyle from all levels, from the national level, at the at the individual level, and at the home, actually at the home level as well. That's what I think.
It'll be interesting to see if the restrictions on opening hours during the MCO and the RMCO will have any sort of impact on, or sustainable impact on changing, if it's just the habit of eating late and eating at all hours, right? Whether, you know, whether Malaysians will feel, even if after it's opened up, I don't think I want to go out at 1, 2 a.m., you know, 3 a.m. to be eating again. I don't know. But Komati, does your institute, you know, the research that you do, does it provide the evidence that can be channeled into policy making to inform policies like this, you know, to change the environment, things like that?
Actually, some of our studies did, but when we talk about policy levels, it's not so easy to change policy. So just by doing one research, you ask them, come on, change this. You know, it actually takes agreement at many levels for us to agree on this. And we can't say that there's a hard evidence saying that because you open restaurants 24 hours, people are becoming old. We don't have a correlation studies to correlate with that. So actually, we have to do further studies actually to actually say what would be the real reasons for people to have like obesity issues and so on. Yeah,
Komati, I think the Institute for Health probably play a role to help to do research on the traditional method of that people believe for generations. So to challenge those things, for example, if there's a study to look at birds' nests, then actually specifically do that. One of the problems about people following all these tradition is because there's no counter study to prove them right or wrong. So because the for generation is being done doesn't mean that it's the right thing. But yet for generation is being done, it doesn't mean it's a wrong thing. Mm-hmm. So the Institute for Health actually have a domain which is looking at research and medical practices. And I really think that is crucially important for us to challenge our Asian values and tradition and then look at this and apply science to it, to look at the scrutiny of science to see whether how robust is the evidence.
Thank you. Actually, we welcome that suggestion, Dr. Josh. Maybe in next future studies, maybe we look into that matters pertaining to that.
George, are you saying that you know, in order to achieve health literacy, we have to put aside cultural traditional practices?
Well, I mean, I think it's a paradox, just like what I highlighted earlier on. A well-trained doctor who has got good knowledge, but not necessarily want to take the medicine because of whatever the preconceived idea. And also opted for something that is unfounded. So does that mean that I'm giving up, if I do not believe in bird's nest, does that mean that I'm giving up on my medical belief? So those things are important to be assessed. So like, for example, one example that is brilliant idea is the shark's fin. Right, for traditions, for generations, Chinese believe in shark's fin is actually something that is a luxurious food. It probably will bring sort of all sort of potency and whatever, right? But when it's proven wrong and when it's proven that it actually kills shark unnecessarily, within the last two decades, that practice stopped. So I think if we can continue with that basis, and then the world will be a better place where unnecessary practices or so-called tradition will diminish and then, at this generation.
What kind of conversations do you have, George, when your patients bring up these kinds of practices and insist that they are better?
Well, there are two types of patients. One patient convince you that they take their medicine, and then but yet, you know, they will take the medicine home, but they actually don't comply with the medicine, and then go to traditional medicine anyway. And the second type who will argue with you and then discuss. I put the word in discuss with you. You know, the anecdotal evidence how certain people are cured by, like, Yutun grass or some, you know, lotions and potions and that sort of things. But what we do is have healthy adult conversation to show them that these are scientific basis, which is scrutinized with placebo control trials over how much period. At the end of the day, the decision, the final decisions, obviously, the onus lies with the person who decide to consume it or not. But the things that most people, if they go for traditional thing, I'm hoping that it's not coming to any harm. But taking traditional medicine or any natural, in air quotes, remedy, it's not a risk-free proposition. Mm-hmm. So therefore, people need to be aware that they're not this is not a completely harmless intervention.
Kumati, I want to ask you what you think about social media. And I think we cannot avoid the use of social media in communication and getting information now. But, you know, how do we use social media properly?
So we have to, like, as an individual, we use social media. We have to first evaluate, assess whether, ask ourselves, whether it is the trusted source of information that we are receiving. Because during this COVID-19 pandemic, we were receiving a lot of, like, the social media was flooded with a lot of messages. some from the trusted source, from the health institutions, and some from untrusted source. So at this point of time, we have to judge wisely which informations that we are supposed to absorb and take in, and which informations you're supposed to like, can evaluate and see whether it is the rightful information from the rightful source. So not all that posted in the social media is should be absorbed by us. We have to actually screen wisely which we can take in and which actually we shouldn't be following. Yeah.
But sometimes it's difficult for you to assess whether it's credible or not. You know, during the one thing that I had my mother send to me, by taking like 10 cloves of garlic, you prevent yourself, you know, from getting COVID-19. And then when I said to my mother that this was fake news, my mother said, "How do you know?"
Yeah, exactly. That's yeah, so
then, and that's the problem. I couldn't answer that question. Then I just said to my mother that the only way that I know is that if you take 10 cloves of garlics every day, I'm not going to go anywhere near you anyway. Nobody will get COVID-19 because your breath will stink so much that you will never get COVID-19.
But your mother has a valid question. How do you know? How can you tell me that this is not valid when somebody that I trust has sent it to me?
Okay, actually, when we come to explaining on that, that's why I say we should be aware that where does this source of information comes from? If it's like, you know, health organization, reliable health organization, like from the messages from WHO or from our Ministry of Health, then actually you can know that these are reliable health organizations that give us accurate information regarding this issue. Otherwise, when you see a certain video and you don't even know where the source comes from, I think you have to be wary whether you should trust this information or not. That's why actually WHO came up with a lot of information on myths regarding to this issues per se, like taking garlic, like taking certain drinks can avoid, you know, that kind of thing. So we have to actually see and screen through where this information source is coming from.
That's quite important. So 10 cloves of garlic doesn't work. Do you have a final message for the topic of health literacy today, Komati?
We have discussed a lot. So what I would say is health literacy is actually a very important aspects that we should give importance to, in the sense like it's not about health knowledge per se, but then it's beyond that, because it actually empowers you to judge wisely what kind of how you can use information effectively in making rightful decision making. So when we say about health literacy, it's not a MOH role or responsibility alone. Actually, all can work together. All the ministries can work together, actually, to impart the importance of health literacy to populations. Like, by Ministry of Education can actually introduce the concept of health literacy to the school children. Ministry of Communication can help us to actually disseminate effectively the messages according to the target group. So what I would say is collaborative efforts are needed to actually make our Malaysians population health literate population. Yeah, that's right.
George?
Prior to this program, I never even thought about health literacy as an entity. But after today's program, I begin to reflect that it is actually incredibly complex, because it's not just a matter of accessing, processing, complying, and disseminating the information. It's also a complexity of your upbringing, your culture, and also your surrounding. And then also how you value your own life and how you value the people around you. And I think it is absolutely right, Komati, you got it absolutely right, that it's really overall behavior. So I think culturally, a lot of things that in the Asian culture, it's being passed from generation to generations. Although some of them may be interesting, some of them are completely unfounded. And I think as the new generation, we need to scrutinize our past and not just accepting it. So in the meantime, what I'm going to do is just carry on eating garlic with bird's nest, and somehow that will keep the COVID and also the cough away.
No, that do not end on that message, George. You're not supposed to be.
According to my mommy.
You're not supposed to be giving fake news.
Okay.
No, I think we should end on the message to check the Ministry of Health for credible information.
Well, that wasn't sourced from Ministry of Health, by the way. It's from my mother.
Thank you so much. I've been speaking to consultant urologist Dr. George Lee, who you should not listen to for advice about preventing COVID-19, and Komati Periladen, Health Education Officer from the Institute for Health Behavioral Research at the National Institutes for Health. You've been listening to Health and Living on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.